Good morning, good afternoon, and good night from wherever you are listening to the Between the Tackles podcast. Joe, Burge, and Manish on the cast tonight. But first off the top here, we have some very important and exciting news. Our podcast is now part of the Believe podcast network. We've had some great conversations with the gentleman in charge over there. Manish, you've had some prior relationships over there. Burge, it seems like you're getting assimilated very fast. So I just want to say we're excited to move forward. We're excited to be a part of the Believe Network. And I'm excited to kind of start collaborating with some of the insane people that we have on the same network. So I know you guys will probably echo the same type of sentiment, but what do you guys think?
Oh, I'm super pumped. Like you said, I've been talking with them, got some great ideas coming for the podcast in terms of, you know, media graphics that we're going to start putting out. So definitely excited to be a part of it.
Yeah, it's a great team. You just alluded to it, Joe. A lot of great people on podcasts throughout the league. And I'm just excited to get going. So let's do it.
And unfortunately enough for everybody listening, these three boys, this three-man weave ain't going nowhere, dude. We're going to the top, and you better be coming with us. All right. There's a lot we got. I almost swore. That was
you did. Good catch.
Minutes. That was a good,
good
one.
Catch.
That was a real good one. But so we had a lot go on this weekend. I really don't know where you guys want to start off the top here. But since we are Patriots fans, I do want to start with there's two pieces of Bengals news that I kind of want to kick off the podcast with, which is a crazy way to start an NFL podcast is Bengals news. But we got Spitgate. We got Ja'Marr Chase spitting on Jalen Ramsey. And then just before, I think a couple hours before we started recording, we got reports from Cincinnati that Joe Burrow was a full participation in practice, today. I don't know if that moves the needles for you guys this weekend or for the Cincinnati as a whole, but it's kind of nice to see Joe Burrow emerging from his slumber.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, you know, I'm actually surprised that he's coming back as quick as he did. I think a week ago, Jay Glazer spoke to Burrow and said the timetable was Thanksgiving-ish. So we're right in that wheelhouse. I don't know if it's too late. Clearly, the Bengals don't think it's too late for them to make a playoff push. Otherwise, they wouldn't be accelerating this process. But yeah, Joe Burrow back in the NFL is a good thing for the league for sure.
I definitely agree with that. I'll be honestly kind of surprised if he's going to play first week of practice back where he's going to get back in there. But yeah, I totally agree with you, Manish. Having him as a part playing in the league, one of the best quarterbacks in the league when he's healthy, is always a good thing for the league. Not good for us Patriot fans if he decides to play this week.
Dude, what that franchise is doing to him is absolute malpractice. Mm-hmm. They should sell a couple more TVs off their fucking loading dock to get a decent offensive line. All right, so yeah, my thing with Joe Burrow, dude, is just like it's such a fleeting like greatness. Like you see him for like four games a season, dude, and he throws for like 500 yards and five touchdowns and friggin' three of them, and then he gets hurt because they can't protect him, and then I just hope he doesn't go down as like one of the bigger like what ifs in like NFL history, because like I don't know, I like he's a player of the quarterback position, you know what I mean? Like I respect how he plays because he's a pocket passer, cerebral, accurate passer, and like there's not a lot of that going on in the NFL right now. It's a lot of these athletic kind of moving gunslinging guys, and I just think he just bring a nice yin to all of that yang in the league now.
Yeah, I mean, I think his career to this point can be summed up by the fact that he's won two NFL comeback player of the year awards, which is rare. That tells you that he's been derailed a couple times because of injury. But
what's more rare, bringing the Bengals to a Super Bowl or winning the comeback player of the year twice?
I don't know if anyone's won the comeback player of the year twice. I think he made a joke about it the last time he won, that he hopes to never, you know, win the award again. But just to segue into his most dynamic offensive weapon, he also will not be playing this week, and that's Ja'Marr Chase. I'm just curious what you guys thought about him spitting on Jalen Ramsey. I have some pointed remarks, but I want to get your thoughts on your initial reaction and, of course, the one-game suspension.
Well, I personally think it's an appropriate suspension, just given what we saw what week one with Jalen Carter, where they essentially kicked him out of the game from the first play of the game, and they counted that as his one-game suspension because he missed the entire game. There's no place for that in the game. I love seeing two superstar players jawing like that, but as soon as you start, like, spitting, you cross the line. And I don't blame Jalen Ramsey in the least bit for the way that he reacted to that.
Dude, I'm just like, dude, stop effing spitting on people, dude. There's such a precedent set. I think spitting on somebody is one of the most degrading things you can do. I don't know. It's just, I understand like the heat of the moment. And like, I am definitely somebody who like in my previous, like very illustrious athletic career, dude, I was a hothead. I got into some situations where I shouldn't have. And still, like when I get competitive in golf now, I definitely go harder on the golf course than your average bear. But like, I don't know. I don't like the spinning thing. It pisses me off. I'm glad he's suspended. It's even better against the Patriots. Hopefully tossing these guys for a game will kind of just get this under control. Cause this is like, I don't care about the swearing and the everything, all the celebrations besides the like blatantly like sexual acts. Like I love all that stuff, but like you do have to draw a line somewhere.
Yeah. I echo those thoughts. I mean, it's degrading in my estimation. It's very low class. I think there's parts of everyone's life where you're really mad at somebody. And, you know, at no point, no matter how angry I was with anyone at any point, whether it was a pickup game or, you know, a high school sporting event, which is where I maxed out, at no point did I ever think of spitting on anyone. It just doesn't come to mind. It's just kind of an odd thing. What I thought was interesting, two parts in the aftermath, is that after the game, Ja'Marr Chase actually denied that he spit on Jalen Ramsey when clearly there's footage that shows he did. And then secondly, before the appeal, word leaked out, I imagine through his agent, that his appeal, his defense was going to be that he didn't mean to spit on him, because if he meant to spit on him, he would have spit in his face instead of on his neck, I guess, or wherever he spat. So, I mean, that's the height of desperation. I just thought that so odd to even leak that out, because you're not going to, you know, get any support or sympathy or any, you know, anybody to believe that you didn't mean to spit on him. And the footage clearly shows that he did. He was in his face. And again, this is a violent sport. Just push the guy, you know. You know, maybe if you want to grab his face mask, you get a penalty. You know, do that. But the notion of spitting on somebody, it just shows me that you don't respect them as a person. Forget the game, forget being a player, forget maybe a cheap shot that happened here and there. You just don't respect them as a human being. And again, it doesn't enter into my consciousness. I don't understand how anybody could think, yeah, this is okay, because obviously it's not okay.
Yeah.
All right, I might be on Ja'Marr Chase's side after I heard that defense. I totally agree. As athletic as a guy, as a finely tuned athlete, you telling me he can't spit on somebody, he can't spit in somebody's face, he would miss? Yeah, right. Unbelievable. Dude, and the thing now is like, how long have we been in the internet age? Like 20 years, dude? Everything you do is recorded, and now we have a telescope that can look into craters on the moon, and you can see grains of sand and dust on the moon. You don't think we could see Ja'Marr Chase in 4K spit on someone? Like, come on. It's just, come on, guys.
The whole stadium's on camera.
They probably got him on the sky cam that might have been 10 feet away from him, like literally above his head. All right, you guys want to get, speaking of Joe Burrow, you guys want to get some more AFC North, QB news. We got Shedeur Sanders making his first NFL start on Sunday after having zero first team reps until the first practice of this week.
There's a lot of hype surrounding him just because of his name. He was a backup, and he was the third string quarterback at the beginning of the year. Like, how often do third string quarterbacks ever get first team reps? So like, I understand like they're in a pinch because Dylan Gabriel got hurt. And when Dylan Gabriel comes back, he's going to take over again. I mean, based on what we saw, at least unless Shedeur Sanders comes out and lights the world on fire this week, which I don't foresee happening. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, it's more for the sideshow than anything else for me.
Yeah, look, he was terrible last week, and I know that he didn't get first team reps. I mean, 4 for 16 passing, it's, you know, really bad. Really bad. And I think that Kevin Stefanski's essentially told everyone without telling everyone over the last 6 months that he doesn't think that Shedeur Sanders is an NFL starting quarterback for a number of different reasons. But that being said, with a week of preparation, if there ever was an opportunity for him to be decent in his first start, it would be against a team like the Raiders. And the Raiders are terrible. You know, the Raiders have only won a couple games. Maybe you guys remember one of the teams that they beat.
Week one doesn't count. You guys beat me over the head with it when I said fire Vrabel. Nope.
Yeah, look, I'm with you. I'm with you, Burge. I mean, this is more interesting and fascinating, I think, from a like a sideshow perspective. Clearly, the Cleveland Browns are going to be drafting a quarterback in the first round after this season. Dylan Gabriel's not the answer. Shedeur Sanders, in high probability, is not the answer. But it'll make for, you know, a lot of eyeballs on a game that otherwise nobody would care about.
Well, I feel like Shedeur, like, I watched a lot. I like Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders is, like, one of my favorite athletes of all time. I love just, like, I love his bravado and, like, this what he gives off. I know it rubs a lot of people the wrong way. But then, like, when you get him in a private setting, like, some of the things he says, some of the cerebral leadership things he says, I kind of like, I understand. I feel like I understand him. So I watched a lot of Colorado football, and my opinion with Shedeur is like, he should have been taken by a team like the 49ers or the Eagles or one of those teams with like a loaded roster, because I think his best chance and basically his only chance for success in the NFL, I think, is behind a good offensive line with some weapons around him. I think he has a decent enough, accurate enough arm to play point guard. I don't think he's not a franchise saver. On the Browns, it doesn't matter if they had Jerry Rice and Terrell Owens on the outside. It still wouldn't effing work. But I don't know. I agree, sidecar, it's a little bit of a gimmick. But, like, I don't know. I don't think it's all over for Shedeur Sanders, but like I don't like in Cleveland, you need a franchise altering quarterback, and I just don't think, even though I do have some optimism for him, I don't think that he is anywhere close to a franchise altering player.
Yeah, Joe, look, I agree with you that those are spots that he probably should have wanted to go to, because he can sit back, he can learn, no pressure, and if for whatever reason he was thrust into action, he'd have a good supporting cast around him. The irony of that is that I believe Deion Sanders even came out and said in the last couple months that the Sanders camp made it clear he did not want to go to teams like that. He didn't want to go to the Eagles. He didn't want to go to the Ravens because he wanted to play, and he wanted to play right away. Unfortunately, if you're in a position where you can play right away, you're probably not surrounded by very good players, which is very difficult to overcome unless you're a superior talent. And clearly, Shedeur Sanders is not that caliber of player, at least not right now.
Yeah, I agree. It's just such a catch-22. I'm not out here defending Shedeur Sanders' media performances. Like, it's been some of the most, like, shockingly unaware, like, self-unawareness I've ever seen in my entire life. It's almost, like, cringeworthy. I don't think he's, like, a bad guy or a bad person or something like that. I just honestly think that, like, he sometimes just didn't understand how some of the things he was saying came off. And then also when you back that up with trying to call the shots before you even played a single NFL play, I don't know, just unloaded a clip into your foot.
What a difference a year makes with him. The last year he's talked about as a top 3 draft pick in the NFL draft. And now here he is, 5th round draft pick. And now he's getting his start with Cleveland, and they don't even really want him to play for them. You look at the whole story as a whole, and it's just, what a fall. And he's got an opportunity here to ascend again, but I think we're all kind of in agreement with where we think that's going to go.
Yeah, it's been a weird week for him too. Not only getting his first start this week or Sunday, I guess, but he also got burglarized and lost $200,000 in merchandise. So,
oh my God, I didn't see that.
Yeah, $200,000 of personal belongings.
One Richard Mille watch. He just so many Richard Milles. I'm sorry, not to make light. I hope everything's okay.
And by the way,
come on the pod if you want.
He's the second AFC North quarterback to have his house burglarized.
Yeah, that happened to Joe Burrow during a game, right? And that's how they figured out he was dating that very pretty lady. Shout out. Burge. You know what time it is, baby.
I don't want to do it this week.
You know,
I really don't.
We are doing it, bro. Come on. Break out the spreadsheet.
After a couple of weeks of nice little humble brags on the podcast, I'm going to be the butt of the jokes this week. I had my worst week in over a month. Winless this past week. Manish finally back in the winning column, getting a couple of wins. Joe, too. Both you guys crushed me this week. just to summarize, let's just summarize where we're at on the season. I'll get my little humble brag in right now, and that'll be the only one I make. I still lead the pack, but the gap has closed. I am one game over 500 at 17 and 16. Joe, you're in second place, 14, 18, and 1. And Manish, right behind him, 13, 19, and 1. The push is saving you guys.
Hey, I is so bad.
But hey, we got a real opportunity here now to build some momentum for you guys and for me to get back on track to get the podcast as a whole, get our picks back on track down the stretch here as we get ready for the playoff push. I'll start us off. First game I'm going to take New Orleans -1.5 against the Atlanta Falcons. This was the one I probably feel the least good about just because it was my last pick. And I'm like, I didn't like any of the other spreads out there. But look, Atlanta lost Michael Penix Jr. He had season-ending surgery. So they're going to be riding with the ghost of Kirk Cousins at quarterback. They've been a very hot and cold team as it's gone this entire season. You never know which one you're going to get. New Orleans is coming off a bye after they come up with a big divisional win against the Panthers. I like the Saints here, and I think that they got a really good opportunity here to kind of show something with their young quarterback, Tyler Shaw, and they're the home team. They're laying 1.5, so I'll take that. I know somebody on this podcast might have something else to say about that one, so we'll hear that one. My next pick.
Dude, you guys remember the Tyler Shaw throw at the draft? Every time somebody talks about him, I remember that throw. And
I actually haven't seen that.
Dude, I know. This is everybody who's probably listening. The massive following that's listening right now probably knows exactly what. Dude, they're doing this drill where he's like rolling right and the receiver's like throwing it to the – and the receiver's like running across or to the left. And he like tries to do like the cool Mahomes like flip your hips and like throw it sidearm. And he missed him by legitimately 20 fucking yards, dude. Not even like not exaggerating at all. The ball might have been 20 yards away from him when it was catchable height.
Making me feel so good about my pick here.
Yeah, he's nasty, dude. You're good.
I feel a little bit better about this next one, and part of it is because that's the hater bias in me. I'm taking Houston +6 on the road.
Hang on. Have you ever picked the Bills this season?
I won't pick the Bills.
You won't pick the Bills. Okay.
This is the most insane fucking pick. Houston's on the road, right? They're going to Buffalo?
No, I believe it's in Houston.
It's in Houston. Okay.
Yeah.
Bad pick, not horrendous.
Okay, whatever. Give me all your hate. I don't care.
I will.
I really like Houston's defense, man. They're top for yards per game. Buffalo is a Jekyll and Hyde team. You could talk up all you want about the 6 touchdowns that Josh Allen put together last week. I watched the entirety of that game, and for a large portion of that game, that Bills offense did look lost. They had a couple of, you know, explosive plays that kind of opened the doors, some long throws. But Josh Allen, you know, started the game with a horrendous interception that made me just laugh, almost fall out of my seat. And, you know, their running game hasn't been what it was at the beginning of the season. Houston's defense is only allowing 250 yards per game total. It's going to be a fascinating matchup for me. I'm trying to also capture in on some of that Davis Mills magic that you guys caught on a couple of weeks ago. I know that Houston is coming off kind of a squeaker win against a divisional opponent last week. If Thursday night games are weird things happen on Thursday night and laying the 6 points. I mean, I think that this game is not going to be a blowout. So Buffalo may win this game, but I like them to cover that 6 point spread that it currently is. So Houston +6.5 and my lock for the week.
Dude, I'm sorry, dude. It's just like the juxtaposition of picking Davis Mills over Josh Allen. Is just like, I'm like looking up the odds right now and I'm like checking in on this game. Like when you were talking, dude, and it's just funny. They have the two props. They have Josh Allen over 250 yards and Davis Mills to throw an interception. It's just such a funny, funny juxtaposition for the two quarterbacks.
I have my opinion there and I'll die with it. I don't care. You can make fun of me.
You said I hate to belabor the Bills point here, but you said you watched the game and you said the offense struggled for most of the game. Is that what you said? Or did I hear that?
They look, Josh Allen was, his throws were off.
Okay. Well, okay. So like reality is that they had over 400 yards of total offense, 7.8
yards. Big plays. Big plays.
7.8 yards per play and 21 points at halftime. So at what point did they actually struggle for most of the game? If they had 21 points at halftime, 400 plus yards of total offense,
they had 44 points in the game. They were the time of possession was completely lopsided in this game. Okay. Okay. Yes.
Okay.
So I'm telling you, I watched Josh Allen throw the ball in this game.
Okay.
You could come at me and say that this was a MVP greatest performance of all time because he had touchdowns.
What I'm wondering is that you said that they struggled offensively for most of the game, to which I countered they had 21 points at halftime.
I understand that.
44 points in the game and over 400 yards of total offense. So at what point did they actually struggle offensively outside of the first interception? So maybe they struggled in the first 5 minutes of the game. Is that fair to say? Maybe
they struggled. They struggled in portions of each half. At the beginning of the portions of each half,
they scored 44 points.
I understand that.
Okay, so they didn't have a perfect game. I think we can all agree
A touchdown. They scored a touchdown in every quarter. 7 points in the first quarter, 14 in the second.
They struggled for most of the game. They struggled.
Josh Allen
points in three out of four quarters.
Josh Allen did not look himself.
No, because you know what? It's not normal for a quarterback to have six touchdowns in a game. So yeah, he probably didn't look himself.
Oh, well, it's real easy when you got three rushing touchdowns with guys pushing you in the back into the end zone. Come on.
Did you see that? Was it 10-yard? Was it 10-yard touchdown run that he had, or 15-yard? You know what I'm talking about, right?
It was like a 10-yard run, and like the last 4 yards, right, he was pushed into the end zone.
Okay, so he wasn't pushed into the end zone the last 4 yards. It was one of the best 10-yard touchdown runs I've ever seen from a quarterback.
I mean, I
watched it.
I'll agree to disagree with you on it. He was pushed in.
He was pushed in when he was at the half-yard line and was going to score anyway. I agree. Totally agree.
He's 6'6". He needs the help, guys. Come on.
Look, we can move on after this, but I just want to say that Burge said that Josh Allen did not look like himself in a game which he threw over 300 yards and had six touchdowns.
Come at me, bro.
Okay, all right, we can move on.
Next week comes and Buffalo loses this game,
I want to see some ass shaking.
Okay.
I want to see some ass shaking.
I'll bring the Crisco.
I cannot express to you how funny it sounds. I'm not a Bills fan. You guys know that, right? I'm not a Bills hater.
You're just an anti.
You barely like the fucking Eagles, and you're from Philly.
That's true. I just find it funny that you said a quarterback didn't look like himself when he threw over 300 yards and had six touchdowns. It's like that's a historic performance.
When you have large chunk plays, the stats are gonna be skewed.
Right, and you know who has large chunk plays? Great players.
I mean. Dude, everybody
the Pats
are gets lucky.
Top 10 in time of possession. We're gonna get turned around. We're gonna get turned around on this one, Burge. We might have to lose this battle.
The reigning NFL MVP got lucky. That's what
that was a participation trophy MVP if I've ever seen one in my damn life.
All right, we can move on.
He's one of the best players in football, though. I mean, no question.
Can I go to my lockdown? I'm just gonna say it. Jacksonville -2.5. Do I got to explain it? Do I got to explain it, or have I?
Well, this is what the whole podcast is for, Burge. Please.
Now you got my face red. Like I'm ready to.
You matched the record button right now. It's so funny.
Jacksonville -2.5 at Arizona is my lock. Jacksonville coming off a win where I picked against them. They kind of embarrassed the Chargers in that game. They blew them out at home. The Cardinals, Jacoby Brissett setting completion records. That's not going to happen again. Jacksonville was a team earlier in the season that we were pretty high on our power rankings. That kind of went through a little bit of a slump there. They played some good teams with their losses, but I like Liam Cohn and Trevor Lawrence, especially after watching that game against the Chargers. Before that, I was like, I'm out. I'm taking Harbaugh Herbert all day. I'm back on with Jacksonville, and
not a big believer in the Cardinals, especially, you know, I don't believe Jacoby Brissett's going to repeat that performance. He set a record, and I think he's going to come right back down to earth. So, Jacksonville.
I would like to request some time to give some positive feedback on this pick.
Go ahead.
Dude, no, I loved it, dude. I love this pick. I thought the Jaguars flipped the script.
I sense the sarcasm.
No. Dude, I actually like this pick. The Jaguars started running the ball and to throw the ball instead of throwing the ball to run the ball, which I think is a good change for Trevor Lawrence. And, dude, the Cardinals have given up like an average of almost 150 yards on the ground in the last three games. So you couple that with the Jags like rushing offense coming together at kind of the perfect time. I don't know. I think they're riding high. They got some mojo, and I think the matchups are in their favor. So I do like this one, Bird.
Take it away.
All right. So another team. So I like picking this. Obviously, my strategies don't work, but I'm going to stick with them. I'm gonna run the damn ball, as Dan Campbell would say. Speaking of Dan Campbell, I'm going to take the Lions -10 versus the Giants. They're at home, coming off a loss. The Giants are in disarray. They've got frigging guys sleeping through meetings. They've got like, they just fired their coach. They have like so much crap going on. They got to go to Detroit in November. It's going to be like 5 degrees out. They're going to go into there. The Lions are coming off a bad loss. I think they're I would have picked this line at like 11 and a half, 12, maybe even 13. Like, dude, I think the Lions are absolutely going to crush the Giants this week. And then Lions, the next one. Oh, go.
Lions playing a dome there, Joe.
No, yeah, but you still got to get off the bus and walk in. Dallas +3.5 versus Philadelphia. Still not sold on the Eagles. I think I don't think anybody on this podcast, including the Eagles fan, is sold on the Eagles yet.
I don't think he ever will be.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm going to take Dallas +3.5 at home. I think they're off. They have one of the best offenses in football. Their defense is rounded. It's one of the worst in football, but it's improving. I don't think Philly has – it just doesn't seem right now to be able to take advantage of a bad defense like that, but I've been wrong before. It's a divisional matchup. Home dogs usually play tough. So give me Dallas to cover 3.5 versus Philly at home. My lock of the week is KC -3.5 versus Indy. This is an emotional pick. This is a 100% emotional pick. That's why I made it my lock. I don't have a single fucking stat to tell you. All I'm going to tell you is KC's defense is decent versus the run. Indy's best part of their game is their run game. So the only time that the Indy looks beatable is when you shut down Jonathan Taylor and put everything in Daniel Jones's hands. So I think the KC coaching staff is much smarter than me. They could probably see that as well. And they are at home. I think it's outside too. Indy plays in a dome. There you go, Manish. I think KC, it's a tough pace to play. I think KC needs a win desperately. I think Indy's wobbling a little bit. So I'm going to wobbling is they were on a bye. But if anybody watched the second half of the Falcons game, and I think it was Germany, Daniel Jones was not trying to win that game. He should be investigated. Make sure he doesn't have a DK account. Because, like, it was unbelievable. He tried to sell that fucking game. And if it wasn't for Jonathan Taylor being an absolute alien, I think they might have let that one slip. So this is an emotional pick. This is a vibes pick. I don't believe in them yet. I don't think they're a true Super Bowl contender. I know that's probably blasphemy to say with how they've played this season, but I like KC at home to cover 3.5. Lock of the week.
I love that pick. I absolutely love it. Steve Spagnuolo against Jonathan Taylor essentially is what it comes down to. And you saw a few weeks back, the Steelers shut down Jonathan Taylor. Colts looked like a shell of themselves. And Andy Reid backed into a corner, and that's where he is right now, right? 5-5. Chiefs must win at home, coming off a loss in Denver, coming off their bye, which is, you know, very atypical for Andy Reid teams. I think the Chiefs come out strong. I think they win this game. Totally agree with you. I love the Eagles Cowboys pick. That's probably not a surprise to you guys. Week one, the Cowboys played the Eagles really tough in Philly on the Thursday night season opener. And if not for, honestly, a few CeeDee Lamb drops, the Cowboys could have escaped with a win there. So divisional game, always tough to sweep in that environment. Philadelphia typically has a tough time in Dallas as well. Dak Prescott, good history against the Eagles. Love those picks. I'm going to go My first pick is going to be against Burge. Two really bad teams, the Falcons and the Saints. Saints coming off a bye and a big win for them against the Panthers. Not big for their draft position, but you know, big for Kellen Moore in his first season. Falcons are reeling, but I'm going to take the 1.5 points. They've got Kirk Cousins. They don't have Drake London. I don't like either team, to be perfectly honest with you, but I really hate the quarterback play for New Orleans. And I think Kirk Cousins has, you know, a little bit something to prove that he can still be a starting caliber player at the position. I think he'll come through even without Drake London. It'll be a heavy Bijan day, heavy Tyler Algier day. I think they squeak one by, but I like the idea of them getting points. My second game, Monday night, another really bad Monday night matchup. The Panthers traveling to the 49ers. You guys know I'm a 49ers guy. You know, I didn't realize until recently that since week 3, I believe, the Niners have actually been on a seesaw, win-loss every other week. They're 7-4 overall, playing a Panthers team that, yeah, you know, Bryce Young had a career game last week. Not a really big fan of his. Not a big fan of the Panthers in general. I just think the Niners are a juggernaut team, much better in my mind than their 7-4 record. They were my lock of the week last week. They are not my lock of the week this week, but I like the idea of them destroying the Panthers in primetime at home, giving 7 points. You know, I don't have a problem giving the touchdown because I think this is going to be a double-digit win for San Francisco. And my lock of the week, the Bears hosting the Pittsburgh Steelers, who may or may not have Aaron Rodgers, who's dealing with a little fracture, a little break in his wrist. So even if Rodgers plays, who knows how effective he'll be, even though it is his left hand, it's still, I think, significant. Aaron Rodgers, as everyone knows, has owned the Chicago Bears in his career. He has said as much throughout the years. So I'm sure he's going to be highly motivated to get in there, but I don't know how effective he'll be. If he doesn't play, forget about it. Mason Rudolph doesn't scare anybody. The Bears, winners of 3 in a row, I think they're kind of hitting their stride right now. And I like them giving the 2.5 points to Pittsburgh. And that's why the Bears are my lock of the week.
You know Chicago's going to be fired up for that one to try to take down Aaron Rodgers after all the trash talking he's done to them over the years.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's like, now he's in the twilight of his career and he's not fully healthy. So, you know, they're going to
ripe for the picking.
Yeah, I think he's ripe for the picking. Again, I'm sure he's going to try to play. I don't know if he can finish the game if he starts it.
Why? Dude, I don't know. This guy pisses me off, dude. Go back into a drug hut, you douche. He makes me so. It's like, oh, you're 40 something years old. You're gonna play with a broken wrist, dude. It's a bone injury, dude. If you just take 2 or 3 weeks off, it's gonna heal. Like, it's not. I don't know. He just makes me so angry for no reason.
He would have made you more angry if he actually made you follow through on your word a couple of years ago and made you go into the ayahuasca hut,
dude. I'm mad about it because that would have been like, I could sell that. You know what I mean? I could sell that to the wife. Like, babe, I made a bet. I was just making bets on the podcast and we're just doing it for content. Like, I have to go lose my mind in the Amazonian rainforest. I have to. It's simply business.
We were so close.
Came back and played.
So close.
Yeah. Well, dude, it was like, if the Jets make the playoffs, he might play. And it's like, all right. So he's definitely not playing. Anyways, you guys want to get into the top five?
Let's do it.
Who wants to start? Burge, you want to start with number 5?
Same team as last week. It's the Pats. And, you know, they're coming off that Thursday night win against the Jets. Thursday night games are weird. It wasn't as clean as I think Joe and I would have liked to have seen. But, you know, they keep winning. And, you know, obviously the Milton Williams injury is going to be something to keep an eye on down the stretch here because, you know, that run defense has been their strength. And, you know, if they were going to lose a position, a player at a position, it was defensive tackle because they have a lot of depth there with Christian Barmore and Tonga and everybody like that. But, you know, another game coming up this week, possibly playing Joe Burrow. Their real tests are going to be in a couple of weeks when they have to see the Bills again and the Ravens. But, yeah, they're appropriately at number 5 right now.
Dude, speaking of the Jets in primetime, dude, PFT commenter on part of my take had a great take that after week 10 of the season, fans should be able to vote teams out of primetime slots, so you never would have to watch like the Dregs. Like, yeah, I think the Raiders haven't been on primetime like 4 times in the last 6 weeks, and like you got the Jets playing in primetime. Nobody wants to see that. So yeah, I definitely would get behind that. So yeah, it was one of those games on Thursday night, Bears, where reminds me of the old days, man. Reminds me of the old days. Get out of there with a win. Don't have to do anything special. Don't have to play your A-plus game to beat the fucking Jets on Thursday night. So I think, I don't know. I like that win for the Patriots. I know some people on the podcast may have not loved that win for the Patriots, but
they don't love any wins for the Patriots.
Manish, give us your honest take on the Patriots at 5 there.
Patriots at 5? Look, you guys know how I feel. I think it's borderline criminal that the Colts are not ahead of them. But, hey, you know what? That's just the way it goes. I got 2 Patriot fans here. And they're a very good team. You know, they're very good team.
The levy break. As soon as you let us get the Pats to 5, the levy was broke.
Yeah, well, I mean, and they're not playing any good teams the rest of the way, so they're probably going to have to hang around at the top 5. Number 4, though.
Book it. There you go, Bears. Book it.
Hold on. So number 4 is actually a really good team, and they dropped a couple spots. They dropped from 2 last week to 4, and that's the Detroit Lions. And, look, we all watched that game on primetime. And I cannot remember a game in which the head coach essentially gift wrapped the win for the opponent. Dan Campbell was 0-for-5 on 4th down attempts. Just reckless decision making. The play calling to me was fine. It was the in-game decision making, which he's gotten some heat for over the last several years. He's aggressive, but I think there's a fine line between being aggressive and reckless. And clearly, in my estimation, Dan Campbell was reckless the other night against the Eagles. And Eagles offense, by the way, which was floundering and was doing basically nothing, and he just handed them good field position after good field position because of his decisions to go on 4th down, when all he had to do was pin the Eagles back deep several times, and he just did not want to do it. He refused to do it, and that ultimately cost him the game. Because when you look at where the Eagles are right now, we'll get to them in a bit, they have an exceptional defense, but their offense is absolutely a joke. And to me, the Lions could have still won that game if their coach just, reeled it back a little bit, took his, foot off the gas a smidge, but he didn't do it. And that ultimately cost them. All that being said, the Lions are still a dominant team. Joe, you're the one who's laying the 10 points against the Giants this week. Yep. I think they're going to demolish the Giants. I think when they play the Packers in a couple weeks, they're going to demolish the Packers. I mean, this is a Super Bowl contending team that really got in its own way the other night in Philadelphia.
I gotta talk about this 4th down stuff. So, dude, isn't this how the Lions season ended last year? Didn't they go like 0-for-3 in the second half on 4th down and lose to the 49ers? Or was that 2 years ago? I remember, dude.
Yeah, 2 years ago, they were ultra aggressive. Totally. Now, 2 years ago, the game-deciding play was – an aggressive 4th down call by Campbell, a great pass by Jared Goff that with Josh Reynolds, I believe.
Yeah, that's what it was.
The ball. And that was the game in a nutshell. So that decision actually was not a decision that I faulted Dan Campbell for. It was the execution that just didn't work. But this decision making.
That's all the variables you bring in. That's all the variable you bring in when you go for it, right?
Look, that's absolutely fair, but. When I say 0-for-5 on 4th downs, it was really 0-for-4, and then they tried a trick punt, and that got stuffed for the fifth time. So I just think that he plays with a sense of urgency, Dan Campbell does, that he doesn't have to. The team is good enough where it's okay to punt. It's not – punt is a four-letter word, but it's not the four-letter word that he thinks it is. You don't need to do that every single time. And again – 5 failed 4th down conversions, 4 failed plus 1 failed punt is the sole reason why they lost that game. Otherwise, they would have left Philadelphia with a victory.
Well, dude, I think these like we're holding Dan Campbell accountable. That he was a CEO head coach until he took over play calling duties. Like the analytics guys are running the numbers and they're telling you if you should go for it or not. But as the head coach, You need situational and game awareness, dude. Mm-hmm. If that was a 45-40 game and they lose because they're going for it on fourth down because they can't. Jalen Hurts is throwing for 400 yards. They can't stop him. They can't give him the ball back. Yeah, of course, go for it. Even if it's fourth or five and five or six, yeah, you could justify that. But, like, going for it when it's like, I don't know. I'm so done with the analytics. It ruined basketball. It ruined baseball. And if it ruins football, I don't know, dude. I don't know. It's starting to ruin golf, too, because guys aren't going at pins anymore unless they need to make run, dude. Hit it to the middle and two-putt. Don't make bogeys. It's like, no, this is sports. Compete. Do your thing. Like, mm-hmm. don't just listen to the guy in your headset who's running the numbers. Like, that's those numbers don't have players on the field and guys running hot, guys running cold. They don't know how much the other. Like, there's just so many variables and tangents that, like, you can put in front of a head coach to influence that decision, and it shouldn't be win probability for going for it. But that's my soapbox. I'm getting off it. We got another pretty complete team at number three. We got the Denver Broncos. Part of this for me in ranking them, dude, is that defense is insane, man. That defense is unbelievable. And I don't know if this goes into your thinkings about your power rankings, but I'm thinking about the Patriots going into Denver to try to win a game in the playoffs, and I don't fucking feel great about that, dude. I don't feel great about a lot of good teams going into Denver and having to play that defense. Mm-hmm. So as long as they keep the one seed in the AFC, I really think they're going to be a formidable opponent. Bo Nix is a little bit of Jekyll and Hyde, but when it comes to nut cutting time, him and Sean Payton are always on the same page. He's always getting him into space. So I don't know. I like the Broncos. They're a good all around team. Sean Payton being basically on the hash marks and getting pushed down by the ref and acting like he got shot in the leg is something maybe I could do without. I think that was an elbow for Bounty Gate too. He's like, take that one. But anyways, I like the Broncos. I don't want to see them in the playoffs. I would love if they lost another game in the past, found a way to take the one seed so they wouldn't have to go to Denver at any point in the playoffs. Besides KC, and is there another AFC team that I don't want to go into as much as the Broncos or KC? I mean, maybe Indy. That place gets really loud because it's indoors. But, I mean, the Broncos, formidable opponent. They've got they've got two excellent quarters. They've got an excellent pass rush. They got a young, promising quarterback. They got an excellent, excellent winning pedigree head coach. And I heard somebody say this the other day. The reason why I like the Broncos, and especially being in the Chiefs division, dude, there's not a lot of coaches that might have taken that job in Denver playing Mahomes twice a year. And like, and he is, Sean Payton is just simply not afraid. And that's why I like the Broncos at number three.
Yeah, this past week against the Chiefs, they won me over. I was obviously in the past couple of weeks here pretty bullish on them with how they've performed and how they were beating these what we consider bad teams in these low scoring close games. But their defense played out of their minds against Kansas City, and that was a big game in terms of that division. Especially, you know, they still have the Chargers sniffing around over there as well. Denver is definitely a house of horrors. You know, especially like as a Patriots fan, like having to go up there and play a playoff game, like that's the one place that like I do not want to have to go, especially with how that defense is playing and how, you know, like you said about Bo Nix, he has been pretty Jekyll and Hyde, but they're winning games. They have the long win streak just like the Patriots do. They're going into their bye now and getting ready for the stretch run, and I expect them to be right there at the top.
Manish, would you like to talk about your beloved team at two here?
No, I think I'll let you guys handle that. I mean, I don't want to come across as, you know, too critical of a team that, you know, has a great record. But I'll summarize it and we can just move on. Super Bowl caliber offense, Division II caliber. I'm sorry, Super Bowl caliber defense, Division II caliber offense.
Yeah, there was a report. I don't know if you saw that one come out today about how like the meetings have been super tense like these last 2 weeks because like the coaches are starting to kind of get on Jalen Hurts at like because the coaches are getting some flack. You know what I mean? Not getting AJ Brown and Devontae Smith the ball, and then you show the film and these two guys are running wide F ass open. You know what I mean? And you can't get the ball there. The reason I keep the Eagles in the top five, man, is like until they show like they can't beat like decent teams. Like, I don't know what the hell to do with them. They're a conundrum. I don't know what to do. Jalen Hurts is probably the worst top 10 quarterback of all time, but he's still winning games, dude. I don't get it.
That's what it comes down to. That's what it comes down to is winning those games. They're finding ways to win these close games, even when they're some
cool earrings, dude. That's all. Yeah. It's like the same thing, dude.
You know, they're winning games 10-7, 16-9. So like their defense is playing well and the offense is doing just enough.
But I mean, you could say that I mean, I think it's very obvious about, especially the conversation Manish I just had. I feel like the Lions lost that game 100 times before the Eagles could win it. You know what I mean? I just one of those games. But like, once again, you could say it for a good team to take the good field position, go down, put as many points on the board as you can, hold the other team, and hopefully you come away with a win. And I don't know if it's like it's one of those inevitability things. Like, I just feel like the Eagles might just, they just have so much talent that I think that they're just going to be good. And they might not be Chiefs level, like back-to-back multiple Super Bowls in 5 years, like kind of good. But I just think that they're going to have some extremely tough decisions to make when it comes down to what to do with Jalen Hurts and go forward there. You guys have anything else on the Eagles?
Nope.
All right. How many victory laps will I get to take this year, dude? This is the weekly installed Joe victory lap. Dude, we still got the Rams at one. There's absolutely no reason to knock them off the one spot. I feel like out of all of the teams on this list, the Rams at one was probably the one that we talk about that one the least. They have the best quarterback in the league this year. They have the best quarterback combo in the league this year. And I say it every week, the way they rebuilt that defense, the way they put pieces around Matt Stafford to make another elite offense. I don't know. I'm going to keep saying the same thing over and over again, man. This team is good. I think if Stafford stays around for the next couple of years, I really don't see any holes to poke at this point with the Rams.
Yeah, you know what's great about the Rams? You know, when they won their first Super Bowl, the whole mantra was F them picks. You know, they gave up first-round picks, premium picks. They got Stafford, and people thought, you know what? They won their Super Bowl with Stafford. Now they're going to go through a rebuilding phase. Who knows when they'll be good again? But Stafford's still the quarterback, and they're legitimately a Super Bowl favorite again. So they're doing the right thing from a front office perspective. You know, that doesn't get talked about nearly as much as Sean McVay. McVay's a great coach, of course. But I think that's a job that Les Snead has done in that front office, you know, deserves some praise. Because who would have thought after they won the Super Bowl with an old-ish Matthew Stafford that they would have another chance to win one with him without a lot of premium picks? I mean, they were just gutted in the draft because of the trades that they made, kind of an all-in chips to the middle of the table type move. But here they are again with Matthew Stafford at the helm. And when you look at this season, I think they're the best team in football. You know, I typically don't like to get into the conversation of, well, they should be this. Their record's 8-2, but they should be this, you know, for better or for worse. But when you look at their two losses, one loss was in Philadelphia, in which they had two field goals blocked in the fourth quarter, including a chip shot field goal in the waning seconds. And the other, they got stuffed on fourth and one on a play that Sean McVay probably regrets more than any play this season, in a 3-point loss to the 49ers. So they were in it with a chance to win every single game this year. And the two that they lost, one was flukish in Philadelphia. And one, you got to give credit to the Niners, but they were, you know, one fourth down conversion away from potentially winning that game as well. So they're a dominant team. In my mind, if Matthew Stafford stays healthy, they are the team to beat, in a couple months when the playoffs roll around. Just a terrific team, well-rounded, offense, defense, coach, quarterback. They have everything. And honestly, I would be surprised if they did not represent the NFC in the Super Bowl.
Agreed.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. They're doing it in arguably the toughest division in the league this year too. Rivals both the West divisions have been really tight, but arguably the combination of the Seahawks, 49ers, and Rams are, you know, much stronger. And not to mention, they have the Falcons' first round draft pick in next year's draft too. So you think about that asset management, that's shaping up to be a top 10 pick at this point. So just more credit to what they're doing out there in LA.
Yeah, that was a great trade.
Somebody knows Sean Payton can send him every episode of the pod this year where I talk glowing things about him to maybe grease the skids for him.
You just say Sean Payton?
Sean McVay, sorry. We talked about both on the podcast. Leave me alone. Somebody could get this. You send it to Sean Payton too. I say nice things about him. Come on the pod, dude. All right, you guys want to hit some fantasy sleepers and then get the Frank out of here?
Go for it.
All right, Manish, I know you got one.
Yeah, I'm going to circle back to the beginning of the podcast. We're talking about Spitgate, and we're talking about the Bengals and not having Ja'Marr Chase. Well, you know, Joe Flacco, Joe Burrow, whoever's quarterback, someone's got to throw to somebody other than T. Higgins, who's going to be blanketed by Christian Gonzalez this week. So why not Andre Yoshivas? He's had some moments in his career where you kind of forget about him, but then he puts up some good numbers. Noah Fant, their tight end, is also another viable option, a guy that I know Joe Flacco has leaned on with Mike Gesicki out. So I think both of those guys, if you need flyers in a deep league or if you're in a guillotine league, you know, dealing with some bye week issues, somebody's going to have to catch passes from Joe Flacco and or Joe Burrow. And it's not going to be Chase, and it's going to be potentially tough sledding for T. Higgins against Gonzalez this week.
Bird, do you have a sleeper for me?
Emmanuel Wilson with Green Bay, the running back. Josh Jacobs is dinged up going into this game, and we know that Green Bay likes to run the ball up there. So he's pretty available across a lot of the leagues as a handcuff option for Josh Jacobs. So if you need a plug and play, go pick him up.
All right, my sleeper this week is Tyrell, your mother shops at Shavers. He had four receptions for 90 yards and a touchdown in the absolute shellacking that the Bills put on Tampa Bay last week. Pause for dramatic effect there. But, yeah, he's available in a lot of leagues. They've got Keon
Coleman. I'm taking the bait.
They got Keon Coleman as a healthy scratch there last year's or 2 years ago, his first round pick as a healthy scratch. And this dude comes through with four receptions, one big one in the end zone. So he's four receptions. I was looking at his targets, four receptions on five targets, 80% catch rate on for a high powered offense in a quarterback that's looking to put up some numbers. I don't know. I like Tyrell Shavers this weekend as a wide receiver two, low wide receiver three option. Thoughts, comments, concerns? Anybody? All right. Go for it, Manish. I know you got a take in there, dude.
I am going to be quick. I'm going to keep it within 10 seconds. Shavers was the Bills' leading receiver last week. That, again, accentuates the greatness of Josh Allen.
Yeah.
Not taking the cheese.
Is that two interceptions? Oh, anyway. That was the first Believe-backed episode of the Between the Tackles podcast. I think we had a great time. We're once again happy to be a part of the network. We will see you on Thursday morning when you're listening to this. We will see you next week, twice a week from now on. Other than that, have a great week. Goodbye.
Go Texans.